Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
This is embarrassing. You should not be listening to this show. What the hell is that about? The hell are you doing?
And now, today's episode.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Here we go.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. This is going to be quite incredible. I know. There aren't many rules that we need to follow here to get this thing done, but here's the bottom line for you. I will do all the talking and you will not, alright? This is a fantasy I have, where I just talk and talk and talk within a restricted amount of time, but you have to shut up. You can't say a word, you can't tweet me, you can't twat me, you can't socialize media Amelia. You can't email me, you can't call me, you can't touch me. Those are the rules. Are you up for it? What do you mean, no? Also, I no longer serve sandwiches while the show is in progress. As long as the show is moving, I don't serve food. Also, no backpacks allowed while you're listening to the show. It's not a mistrust kind of thing. It's just that I don't trust you. There's also no charge to listen to this show. There are no fees involved. I will bill you accordingly in the near future. Also, before you listen to today's show, please sign the disclaimer at the bottom of the screen. It's very important. It involves your firstborn, so you might want to read it. Actually, why would anybody want your firstborn? That's just a lot of crying and a lot of fussing. You keep your firstborn. What were they thinking when they came up with that in the disclaimer? I don't think so. I don't want your baby. I don't even want to come over to your house while your baby's in the house, much less get it. Take care of it, feed it, change its diaper. Are you serious? I've got better things to do than to change a piece of cloth that's full of crap from your child. Are you serious? This is why I never had a job in daycare. Because if I did have a job in daycare, my supervisor would constantly be saying, Ron, where are you going? Where are you going? Come on, Ron, come back here. Where are you going? Where are you going? You just see my ass fading in the distance. A job in daycare? Me? No, it's not possible. First of all, it's not allowable by law. And secondly, no, just no. Hey, if you were listening to this show like about 3-4 months ago, I declared my candidacy for President of the United States. This was when there were only 72 candidates running for president. Now it's up to 352. So I'm going to, I'm making the announcement here on this show. I'm begging out of the Democratic presidential run. It's not because I'm not fit for it, because I am mentally, but I just, I found I don't have the time. I found I don't really have the time. I don't have time to be president. First of all, I don't play golf. That lets me out immediately. Secondly, I don't have time. I don't care. I mean, I care. Well, if you listen to the show, you know I care. But I don't care to do that. So I'm bowing out. I'm packing my bags. I'm leaving this town. I am not running for president of the United States anymore. I know that that saddens so many people because, and by the way, thank you for all your donations. I think I'm up to 73 cents. Thanks a lot. Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm leaving the race. I know. It's a very sad moment, isn't it? I don't think that was a sign of sadness, what I just heard. But I am leaving the race. I don't have the shoes for it, to be honest with you. My shoes are falling apart, and I can't be president with my shoes falling apart. That would be No. I'm not running for president. I could have fixed this country in a second. I know everything to do. I have great relationship with Vladimir Putin. We like to ride bareback on horses while we're totally naked. So that would have worked out very, very well without any interference from him. Kim Jong-un? I don't know. No. We don't talk. I get along with everybody as long as they don't talk to me and bother me. Perfect president. Anyway, I am withdrawing my name from the presidency. I will not be appearing in any debates, and I will not be running for president anymore. No, not doing it. I'm not doing it. You can boo all you want. I'm not doing it. No. All right. One of the candidates for president is a gentleman who was the mayor of Denver and then became the governor of Colorado. It's not whether he would be a good president or not. It really has nothing to do with it because his name is so weird that I can't do this. The gentleman's name is running for president I can't even say his name. It's John Hinkenlooper. John Hinkenlooper. I have nothing against this man. I really don't even know what his deal is. He is running for president, but his name prevents him from ever even remotely being a possibility. You can't have a President Hinkenlooper. You just can't do it. And John, unless you change your name like immediately, this is not going to happen. I respect names. I know that in different countries, Hickenlooper probably means man of peace. I don't even know. Or it could be a broken furniture. I don't know what it translates into other countries. I don't even know where a Hickenlooper would come from. It sounds like some kind of European country that is full of Hickenloopers. It also sounds like a bird species that went extinct like 7,000 years ago. It's a shame about the Hinkenlooper. I know. They were a beautiful bird. And now it's just a gone species. Except for one who's running for president. Hinkenlooper, man. I would have changed that name so long ago when I was mayor of Denver, if I was. And then I would have changed that name. Somehow he got to be mayor and governor with Hinkenlooper as the last name. I don't know how that happened. Of course, that was the first state to legalize marijuana. Maybe that explains it. Hickenlooper, man. You think you want to make it to the White House? I'm surprised you made it out of junior high school without getting beat up by a guy like Trump. Can you imagine if you're running against Trump and Trump came up with a nickname for you? Oh, there'd be like so many possibilities that Trump could just put you in the garbage. Of course, verbally, otherwise. Yeah. Hickenlooper, man, come on. Smith isn't so bad. Good luck, John. Good luck, John. Have a nice day. Most people listening to this show haven't even ever heard of you. I guess if you live in Colorado, that I guess. But Hickenlooper, man, come on. Come on. Get real. Anyway, it's too early to talk about the Democratic field. We can talk about the Republican field because we know who's running for president on the Republican side. Oh, you know who he is. I've mentioned his name like in my sleep practically. Also, when I, by mistake, when I'm hammering a nail into the wall and I'm holding the nail and I miss the nail and I hit my finger, I'll refer to the president verbally with some expletives thrown in before and after the name. Anyway, so I'm not going to talk politics today. What I do want to talk about is a guest that I have coming up rather shortly in the program. This is a pretty cool interview. This woman's name, you might be familiar with her. I don't know. I don't know if you are or you're not. Her name is Lisa Brennan. Oh, Ron, Lisa Brennan, that sounds like a comedian from Canada. Well, it does, but she's not. Lisa Brennan is her name, and then she has one more name connected to her, and then you'll know who she is. Lisa Brennan Jobs. Oh, she's the one that invented working. 9-to-5 jobs? No. Steve Jobs, you know him. Oh, yeah. This is his daughter. And she wrote a book called Small Fry, and we're going to talk to her. And the book is what it was like growing up as Steve Jobs' daughter. That should be interesting, Ron. I know. That's what we're going to do rather shortly here on the program. She'll be joining us, and that'll be kind of fun for you. I don't know if you want to have a party surrounding this. You've got about 10, 12 minutes to put it together. Probably not even. So maybe you should forget that. I live in the Boston area. We do the show out of the Boston area, and the forecast for this weekend is temperatures in the 90s. Yeah, it's going to break the 90-degree mark. It will be the first 90-degree weather day for the entire season, I don't do well in the heat. I don't. If I walked into a room in my house and it was 90 degrees in there, I'd probably pass away. I can't. The heat... You know what the heat does to me? I don't know if this happens to you, but when it's too hot, I do something strange happens to my body. Moisture starts coming out of my pores, especially under my arms, and moisture will form on my forehead coming out of my scalp, and it will actually like drip over my eyebrow onto my nose, and it's a salty moisture thing. It's a salty kind of liquid. I think something's happening in my body where all of a sudden my body says, I'm no longer holding liquids. I'm sorry. We're not going to do it this time in the form of saliva or urine, Ron. We're just going to have the moisture just drip out of your pores all over your body. Your body will become totally liquid. I looked it up online because I thought this is the strangest reaction to heat. I looked it up online on the Google machine, and I found that it's called, and I'll see if I can pronounce it properly, perspiration, something like that. And the only way to resolve the perspiration thing is to, like, get out of 90-degree weather and get into a cooler type of interior atmosphere. So I don't do well in 90-degree weather. I sweat. I just freaking sweat. And I get concerned. I get concerned when my body starts excreting moisture all over the place. Something seems to be wrong. I don't like 90 degrees. I don't perspire when it's like 10 degrees outside, when it's freezing cold. Sure, my body parts start to freeze and turn blue and fall off, but that's better than perspiring. So I'm not into the hot weather, man. No. And a lot of my friends, and I use that term so loosely, it's not funny. A lot of my friends just love the summer heat. They say, oh, I love it when it's really hot outside. What species are you? How can you like that? Oh, I like to be baked like a turkey. I love it. I love it. What? How can you love that? Oh, I love the hot weather. I like to run around in the hot weather. Wow, man. These are the same people that go to a gym. I'm going to the gym. Here, what time are you going to be home? I'm going to stop off at the gym. And what they do is they go into, you'll find this fascinating, they go into the gym and they do something called working out. They work it out. I don't know what is working out. I don't know what's coming out when you work. I'm working it out. They go to the gym and they put themselves on strange contraptions, these torture machines where there's metal and cables and things like that. And you sit on things and people tell you to do things that make you sweat. And as you know, sweating is not something that I just described that I enjoy. It's your body saying something's wrong inside. We got to release the waters. So some people love to sweat, and when they have a good workout, they feel, I'm getting a high from working out. No, you're not. You worked out too much. You're about to faint. You don't know the difference between getting a high and fainting. Being dizzy, you're going to pass out. That's not a high. I do get dizzy. I feel like I'm hot. No, you feel like you're going to die. I'm going to the gym. I'll be at the gym. I'm going to the gym. I'm going to stop off at the gym. I'm going to work it out. I'm going to work out. I'm not going to work in. I'm going to work out. I don't even know what that means. I don't even understand it. I don't know how you're working. That's not work. That's putting yourself in a torture situation. And you pay them for this. Yes, I want to batter my body. I want to stretch it to its limits. I want to make my body do things that it doesn't naturally do on its own. And I'll pay you for that. See that hunk of metal over there with the ropes coming out of it and the strange handles? I'll pay you money for to let me just work it out on that. Let me work it out. Let me work out. The funniest thing about working out and using the, it's not, I think, I don't know if it's called gym equipment or apparatus. Apparatus sounds wrong. It just really does. I spent a lot of time on the apparatus today. Oh, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Yeah, today I did legs. Yesterday I did abs. I'm doing arms tomorrow. Thursday I'm doing head. Friday I'm doing ears. I'm doing Friday ears. Then Saturday I'm going to do legs again because I like legs. And then I'm doing eyebrows on Sunday. Eyebrows. I'm working the eyebrows, man. I'm going to be working the eyebrows. both eyebrows I'm doing. I'm going to work them. Whew. Well, what the hell are you talking about? You realize how weird this sounds? So you go in the apparatus in the gym, and what's the first thing you do? You grab a spray bottle of disinfectant. I don't know what the hell's in that bottle. Could be vodka and water, in which case I would go to the gym. And you spray the apparatus, the equipment, and then because the people before you are physically disgusting, you don't want somebody's ass sweat sitting on your bicycle seat when you're bicycling yourself to nowhere. Yeah, I was on a bicycle today. I did 20 miles. Did you really? Where did you end up? In what county? Oh, nowhere. It's a stationary bicycle. What? You're on a bicycle and it didn't go anywhere? It just stayed where it was? Yes, I was working ankles. Today was my working ankles day. My ankles feel great. Knees, not so much. Ankles are good. Doing knees tomorrow. Then I'm doing the left pinky, the small toe on my left foot. Doing that Monday. Wow, look forward to that, huh? Hope that works out for you. Works out, get it? You know, I can't. I've had many gym memberships in my life. I've told you that. Most of them was that Purple Planet thing. I don't know what you call it. Planet Fitness. That's what it is. Planet Fitness, which is where Trump wants to send people to Planet Fitness. I guess that's somewhere in the solar system. I'm not familiar with it. I've heard of Planet Mars, Planet Neptune. I don't know if this is Planet Pluto. I think we got rid of Pluto for some reason. We turned the planet Pluto into a gaseous state. We just do that. We do it. You can't be a planet forever. Mm-mm. Gotta be gaseous. I'm a gaseous state. That's another reason why I can't go to the gym. I don't think I could hold my gas in. If I'm going to be working my body like that, I think my gas is just going to escape. And other people would not appreciate that. What's that odd odor? It's the guy on the apparatus. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see it. Ain't no spray bottle that's going to take care of that problem. All right, kids. Lisa Brennan Jobs, author of Small Fry, about her life as daughter of Steven Jobs, is going to join us in just a few seconds. But first, this little interruption in our situation here, and then, oh yeah, then here she comes.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show, the podcast world's version of painful itching and swelling. You know they sell a cream for that, right? It's over the counter. Works really well. I've had to use it a lot.
Hello, Lisa.
Hello.
How are you today?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. Lisa Brennan Jobs joins us. She's the author of a book, Small Fry, which is a fascinating book. I actually read the book. I usually don't do that, by the way, but I read this one because it's fascinating. By virtue of your name, Lisa Brennan Jobs, it seems to be a clue about a relationship that you have.
Yes. My father was Steve Jobs.
Yes.
And... but it's not a celebrity memoir. It's a real memoir.
Yeah.
The coming-of-age story about a girl growing up in California.
Yeah.
And then I happen to have these kind of passionate and interesting parents.
Yes. Yes. Who were quite substantial in the world here. When you wrote this book, why did you write the book? Let me ask you that.
My mother had been saying something like, she was saying, you have to understand your history so you don't repeat it,
mm-hmm.
which sounded like a kind of cliche, and I resisted it because the last thing I wanted to do was write a book when my father was so famous.
Yes.
Certainly, then I would be pinned in the celebrity memoir category, and that didn't sound so fun.
Yeah.
But But it turned out to be true. I couldn't seem to write another book before this one. I think I had to get this one out of the way in a certain way.
Yeah.
And it's true that if you take a lot of time with your past, it kind of opens up to you, and a lot of the mysteries get solved, and a lot of the confusions get untangled, and a lot of the assumptions or things you thought when you were a child turn out to be not quite true. So it was very enlightening in that way, and I think I carry forward a different sense of my own past.
Did you have physical memoirs that you had written down through your life, through your childhood?
I had certain journals that I'd written down, and the truth is, at the beginning, when I first got the contract, I was terrified that I wouldn't remember enough to write a whole memoir. But by the end, I probably wrote 7 books of factually accurate stories for this one book. And I think that part of the way that I did it is just talking with people, constructing timelines, and then understanding, laying other timelines on top of those official timelines. Mm. We moved a lot, and that kind of helped, because once I could figure out where the houses were and the schools were, different things came into focus. But the other fact about memory is that it's both factual and emotional, and I think it happens in layers. Once you uncover one emotional layer, more facts come up. Once you get more facts, you get more emotions, and it kind of sandwiches like that.
Yeah.
So it's just a process. I think for everyone, it just takes time and work.
What I found fascinating about the book is how well written it is. Were you, through childhood, through your younger days, were you looking to be a writer? Because this is kind of like an incredible work.
Thank you. Yes, I am a writer.
Yeah.
I think it's rare for a writer to be born into one of these families.
Mm.
Usually it doesn't happen that way. So it's a strange coincidence, maybe. But yes, I've always been a writer, and so I didn't want to apply a less precise and searing and interested gaze to my own life than I would to something else.
Yeah. Do you really think that your life was so different than anybody others, other than the fact that your parents, you know, had a name to themselves?
No.
Yeah.
I don't. No, I think once you get very particular probably about any life, it starts to be more universal, because it taps on deep roots of human nature and commonalities. And so I think that has been a theme that people have come up to me and said, we have the exact same story, or this part is exactly the same. And I do chuckle at the idea that someone might pick it up thinking they're going to get this, you know, story about something that has nothing to do with them, and then they find themselves and their childhood in the pages.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I found there.
You did?
Yeah.
That's great to hear.
I did. Yeah. It's not a book about celebrity, but it is obviously an impression that was made upon you in because of the circumstances in the family. It obviously made you a stronger person.
I don't know. I mean, I guess the thing about children is they have notions that are kind of strange because they don't have perspective or experience.
Yeah.
And so one of the great things about writing a memoir is you get to go accompany your child self and understand what she was thinking, and then also understand from an adult perspective what the truth was, or what something like the truth was. I mean, I was older when I was writing this book than my parents were then. So I'm not sure it's really about celebrity, unless it's about some notion of celebrity that a child had, which really isn't celebrity at all. It was really just a kind of longing for a father and longing for normalcy.
Yeah.
That had more to do with being a child, I think, than anything about the world.
Yeah, but that is a feeling that a lot of children have about their parents, no matter what they do.
I think in my case, circumstances were a little bit more exaggerated, or at least were
perhaps,
more in relief, but they aren't different from a lot of people's. And also, maybe a lot of people, different people, have more exaggerated circumstances in other ways. I think childhood is full of these wonderful misunderstandings and longings and confusions.
Yeah. For me, it's difficult to discern between my extreme youth and my young adulthood with my parents, because they were two separate relationships, I think. They weren't the same. And I think it's because I developed, not they didn't, I did, I think.
That's a tricky thing in writing memoir, is going through these separate strands and separate perspectives and trying to sort them out and make sense of them. And I think, and then for the reader, to accompany the reader on that journey, it's not that the situations around you are changing often, it's that you're changing. The other problem with writing memoirs, of course, as you're writing it, for the 7 years or more that it took me to write this book, I was also changing too.
Yeah.
And so there are like several different, every single part of this equation is changing at the same time. And so to kind of accompany the reader on that journey without making them confused, but also without oversimplifying, was kind of the challenge and the fun of it. I think that I wasn't really ready to publish it until I had reached a certain level of maturity, and I wasn't there when I started writing the book. So that was part of the reason it took a while.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I couldn't find the perspective I needed.
Yeah, I don't know what it was about the book. I've written a lot of books, memoirs about, you know, childhood and that kind of thing.
Written?
No, I'm sorry. Read. Not
read. Oh, okay. I was...
No. You're okay. Right. Yeah, I used the wrong word. That's why I'm not a writer.
That's okay. But you've read a bunch of memoirs about childhood?
I have, and I didn't have a connection to them. My parents weren't famous in any sense or, you know, renowned. But with your books, for some reason, as I went through it with you, I started reviewing my childhood. I don't know what pulled me into my childhood from your book, where I hadn't been pulled in with other memoirs. It's kind of interesting. It might be your writing style. I don't know.
I guess that was my hope, that in being honest about my perspective and also the things that I'm ashamed about and the strange quirks that I had and the embarrassing wishes I had, that other people would see themselves in it. And not only would they see themselves, but maybe they would give themselves permission to be even more human because I have.
Yeah, probably it. The book is called Small Fry. It's available everywhere. Is there a website that we can visit?
I would just go to lisabrennanjobs.net.
Okay.
And then you can, you know, or if you wanted to just, you know, get the book straight away, you could go to an independent bookseller.
Excellent. Well, yeah, you could always do that. Hey, it's a pleasure speaking to you, and congratulations on the book as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
That's terrific. We're out of time for today. This has been an experience that I'll never forget. What did we do? What did we do just today? Oh, that's right. Yep. I remember now. I talked about going to the gym, and I talked about the Hickenlooper guy. I remember now. Yeah, I got it. I got one of my brain cells working there. Just need a little kickstart. That's all. If I had a gift, I would give it to you, but I don't, so I won't. All I can do as a gift from me to you is wish you peace.